Cutting the Curd is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country? For more information, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hi, everybody.
And this week, we are happy to be joined by Johnny Hunter, who is a founding member of the Underground Food Collective. Are you with us, Johnny?
I am. How are you?
Good, good. Great to hear from you. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, of course.
So I'm going to sing your praises just a little bit before we get into, you know, question and answer. So the Underground Food Collective is a very interesting group of people in Madison, Wisconsin. They are, as they say, a collective. There is no one person that's in charge of this group. And they do a number of things, dinners at various locations around Madison and around the country helping organize bike tours. They now have a restaurant, a very successful restaurant in Madison, a commissary kitchen from which they do lots of catering, and a burgeoning charcuterie business as well. So we're very excited to have you on and to learn more about all these ventures that you and your comrades have started over the years.
Awesome.
So most people, so let's start with the idea of just the collective. I feel like most people, entrepreneurial types would think that's weird, the entrepreneur is in charge of the business. How did you guys come at it as a collective, and how do you kind of make that work in your business?
Yeah, I think it's one of the more interesting things that we have going for us, and maybe somewhat of an advantage sometimes, but Wisconsin has pretty strong tradition of cooperative businesses and cooperative organizations. And so when we were starting up, the idea of having a single person in charge seemed to be something that we didn't want. I think we had worked in, galley kitchens where, you had a head chef who took all the credit, and a lot of other people working really hard who didn't get that. And so we decided that we wanted to spread that out, and so we looked at other models, and there's some businesses in Madison that have been around for a long time that have been pretty successful. So we were let's use that kind of collective nature and get rid of a lot of the titles and roles that are normally associated with that, and have a decision-making process that is one that is, input is from the group rather than, one person has the best idea, which has always kind of run against my intuitions and the other people who we work with.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny. I'm reading Ari Weinzweig's book right now. He's one of the founders of Zingerman's in Ann Arbor, and it's called The Lapsed Anarchist's Guide to Being a Better Leader. And he tells this great story about back in the 1800s, there was this group of anarchists out in the Pacific Northwest, and they're all on a boat. And there was kind of tension between them and the local police force at large, just because, the idea of anarchy or anarchists made people, unsettled. So the police came up to this boat and they said, "Who's in charge here?" And they said, "We're all in charge." And we're all the leaders. And it caused this crazy skirmish to happen because people just couldn't, they thought, "Oh my God, these people are out of control. They all think they're the leaders. They're dangerous." But I kind of love that story of, like, you know, and it's, I feel like it makes for a much more successful organization, because then everyone's, you know, creative, everyone's in the driver's seat of their own projects, their own vision. And it allows it to be more rather than less.
Yeah. I'd say, like, the main thing for us is, like, I mean, I worked in kitchens where, like, you know, you just would end up doing all this work that was, you know, mostly unappreciated, but yeah, sometimes useless, you know? And so, you know, I just wanted to be in a situation where, you know, people who were like, hey, like, I think we should do it this way, and here's my reasons, and that would be really valued versus, you know, some chef who learned how to do it from some chef else, you know, like, that's just how it gets done, you know? So that was a lot of the inspiration, is, you know, trying to raise the voices of people who are not, you know, necessarily in a position of power.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, can you tell us a little bit about the evolution of your organization? I mean, from kind of like a loosely bound collective that would, like, host informal dinners and events, to what you guys are now. Can you talk a little bit about how you started and where you've ended up?
Yeah. So the, you know, we started off, kind of catering. The whole idea to begin with was to cater events for nonprofits. So to raise money for, like, nonprofit groups that we wanted to support. And so we did a couple of meals and events and stuff kind of around Madison and in kind of the South Central Wisconsin area that led. And, you know, we were really young at this point, maybe like 21, 22. And, you know, but we were working hard, and we had actually a really wonderful space that we could work out of. Like, we had this coffee shop that was had a full kitchen, and we were running that as, like, an anarchist organization, kind of separately from what Underground is now. So that kind of started, and then, you know, we wanted to pursue, you know, we started becoming interested in, you know, just doing some things as a business too, is, you know, trying to make, like, hey, like, maybe we could, you know, figure out a way to make a living doing this. So, so we started catering originally, and that led to, you know, a small business that we started up together. But from there, catering is somewhat closed, and, you know, you don't get to really pick your clientele.
Right.
And you kind of, you know, you're cooking for two people who hire you, and you have a captive audience, but they might not really want to be there or care that much. So we wanted to do more things that were, like, open to the public. And so that just kind of coincided, I want to say, like, 2006, 2007, and, you know, people were starting to do underground dinners, and, you know, those things were happening. And so we started to do those around Madison a little bit. And that became, like, a really great platform for us, because we were able to do creative things and work with farmers to do growing. Like, I mean, the first whole basis of everything was raising some heritage hogs and processing them all ourselves, even doing the slaughters and stuff, and then serving meals based off of that. So so we were able to work with smart farms to grow, like, something just for one event, you know, and, you know, a really different experience than a restaurant or catering.
That's like it's like an art piece, you know. Yeah. I feel like the lines between art and everything else are constantly blurred, but that in particular, it's so beautiful, you know, spending all that time raising an animal for, and then having that experience of breaking it down and for the one event, you know, it's just it's a very beautiful sentiment, a beautiful act.
Yeah, and it wasn't a full-time thing for, like, the catering company wasn't a full-time thing for us at that point. So, you know, but we, you know, it would do enough so that we didn't have to work other jobs full-time. So I remember going to picking up the feeder pigs and then building the fences and, like, you know, dropping food off from leftover catering events for the hogs and stuff. And then, you know, we did the slaughter and the butchering ourselves. And then, we gained a reputation at that point. You know, people were like, oh, you know, you don't only cater, you know, you actually, it's interesting. So, you know, short story, we started taking those, did some in New York. And that was pretty successful the first time through. Like, I think Gourmet Magazine and the New York Times wrote up the dinners we did, like, you know, small web stuff, but like the Gourmet Magazine one is actually one of my favorite pieces that's ever been written about us, just because the author really talked about the farmer and kind of like he articulated kind of his process so well during that dinner, and then the writer talked about that. So yeah, we were kids and we weren't doing anything at this point in, you know, Gourmet Magazine. So we come to back to Madison and like we're heroes, you know, after going to New York.
It's so cool. It's like an artifact now to have, you know, something from Gourmet.
Yeah.
They can keep.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. Yeah. And those, yeah. And so, and since, I mean, so I feel like that's been something you guys have continued to do, these dinners in New York. I mean, you guys, have continued to do this like sort of traveling catering, or not catering, but dinner events. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, along with your other things that are more kind of, you know, brick and mortar roots based in Madison.
I would say actually we're not, you're not going to see that too much from us for a little while.
you guys have plenty going on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's funny because we did lose a, like, kind of skip forward in the story. We had a restaurant that had a fire in 2011, and we had done dinners. The last dinner we had done was 2010 in New York. And so then we no longer were doing the dinners because we're so busy with the restaurant. And at the fire, you know, we quickly started that pop-up thing again, you know?
Keep the spirit alive, keep everybody, your team, you know, motivated and cooking and together.
Yeah, and so we immediately did two in Madison, and then we went to New York 3 times in the next 4 months.
Wow.
5 months. And that was the last time we've done like a dinner that was, you know, kind of
off-site.
Set up as that kind of thing was spring of 2012, and we took over Joseph Leonard for 3 days.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And
their
restaurant group is Little Wisco, so that's perfect that you guys, you know, it's a good connection. Well, I'm just looking. We have reached the halfway point of our show, so we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Johnny Hunter of the Underground Food Collective, and we're going to get to our curd word of the week. So stay with us.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
All right, and we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. If you want to check out past episodes of Cutting the Curd or check out the other programs on the network, you can do so at heritageradionetwork.org. And Sophie is going to lead off this next segment with our curd word of the week, which is a dorky cheese vocabulary segment that we started a couple weeks back.
All right, so this week's curd word is microflora. Technically, microflora refers to just tiny plant life, but it's often used in cheesemaking and affinage to just refer to microscopic life that's kind of introduced during the aging process of a cheese with a natural rind, and microflora are microorganisms.
Hey, we love microorganisms. They do a lot of good work. Yeah. Actually, that's a perfect thing. Yeah, you guys, so Underground Food Collective has started a charcuterie operation, among its other, you know, lots of illustrious projects. Maybe we can start out talking about that. How'd you guys get into the charcuterie game?
Yeah, it was something, you know, because we had started doing some things with pigs, you know, in like 2007 or something, we wanted, you know, we were looking at, you know, how to use whole animals and stuff. I think I was actually a vegetarian up until right around 2005.
I love those stories.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think one of the things I, you know, wanted to understand was just like, you know, how the whole animal could be used so that, you know, it was done in a way that was like, you know, less resource intensive, you know, than, you know, I think I always think about like, you know, you have two small tenderloins on an animal, but like, you know, most people's interaction with pork is pork tenderloin, you know, and so like, and if you see a whole animal that you're just like, it's crazy. Like what happens to the rest of the animal and how are they only selling that part for $7.99 a pound or something, you know?
Right.
Like, so, anyway, so yeah, so we had started doing it. We just, you know, just basic stuff, like really simple and such. And, you know, it's cool. The state of Wisconsin has been really supportive of, small producers, and, the head of agriculture development at the Department of Ag approached us and said, hey, we know you guys are doing some of this stuff. People are talking about it. Let's do it right. And we'll kind of help you get this going. And,
that's amazing.
So they provided a lot of.
Because very few people are doing it, but very few people have the time or the resources or the knowledge to really set it up, you know, in the best way, in the best practices.
There's a lot of food safety concerns. It's a pretty safe process, and, you know, definitely something that people should try at home. But if you're doing it on a commercial scale, you know, you need to think through some of the food safety issues in a way that, you know, a cheesemaker would. Then the state provided a decent amount of technical assistance. We got a pretty small producer grant to kind of help us get started. And then the food safety side has been by far the most time-intensive investment side that the state has put in, and they've been really helpful on that. And I feel like I'm the only person who says that.
That's really
in this industry.
I feel like Vermont is similar to Wisconsin in its support of small producers. It realizes that kind of like that's what it's just as important, and especially like we were just talking on our last show last week about a shift between, you know, people, food scientists, especially thinking about big industry versus small producers, and it seems like there's definitely a shift. Big industry realizes that there's an opportunity, or the food scientists, realize that there's an opportunity with small producers. It's actually like a good business opportunity for them as well to be able to kind of, you know, set up services for smaller producers because there's just more and more. So how...
And a lot of those big producers have set up, you know, systems that are bad for small producers.
Right, yeah. Or just kind of untenable, you know, not everyone can afford that equipment. Not everyone, you know, not everyone right. needs all that big equipment, you know? So if you just are able to do it on a smaller scale, but more responsibly, you know, that's great. So how has it worked for you guys? So you were doing a little bit here and there, and now with this grant and with the support of the state, can you sort of describe to our listeners what your charcuterie business looks like now, or your charcuterie production?
Yeah. So, back to like the whole animal thing, you know, we bring in, you know, I think we're doing about 6 hogs a week right now. And I'm pretty sure we're the only producer that only uses whole animal, kind of for the charcuterie. I think a lot of other people buy in shoulder meat or stuff like that, or just the hams, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we base our production off of whole animal, and we've done, you know, pretty traditional European style salamis that we're trying more and more to kind of develop with, you know, kind of our roots in the Midwest. So, you know, we're starting to use flavors and ingredients. Like last year, we dehydrated like 1,000 pounds of ramps and did a ramp salami, and we have a goat salami that comes from dairy herds here. We talked about that on the show before.
Oh, which is so good.
Yeah, just got to try it the other day. It's delicious.
Yeah, I got, thank you so much. I got to bring some of those back with me from Madison from the ECS conference the other week, And yeah, they're really delicious. More people should eat goat.
Yeah. This year we harvested a bunch of spruce, and then we're using like a lambic-style beer from Wisconsin to do a new one too. So, you know, we keep within the European traditions a lot, but then now we're trying to kind of, I don't want to move like too crazy into like, you know, do a bratwurst. You're not going to see a bratwurst, you know, salami from us, but, you know, we're going to use ingredients from this area to try to define it.
But you did do a summer sausage, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
that's good. You got to have one Wisconsin sausage in there.
And we make lots of bratwurst, but, you know, we're not doing a bratwurst salami.
Nice.
So that's what we're doing. And we do whole muscle like copa and some cutatello and then, you know, lots of salami. So I think we're really lucky in the sense that, you know, we have a butcher shop and a restaurant and a catering company. So, you know, we're able to merchandise the animal throughout
the network
company,
kind of.
Yeah, versus I think some other salami makers who have to, you know, that's all they're doing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You have a lot of outlets, a lot of audience in different places. So just so our listeners kind of get the sort of grand breakdown. So you have your butcher shop, the underground butcher shop. And then you have your restaurant, which is called Four Quarter.
Can I? I'm going to brag for a second, but we just got nominated as one of the best new restaurants in the country by Bon Appetit yesterday.
Beat me to it.
We had that as our next bullet. So yeah, that's super super awesome. No, it's better that you announce it. Congratulations, and yeah, everyone can see the full list on the Bon Appetit website. But Four Quarter is the only Wisconsin restaurant that was nominated. So that's super awesome.
Very cool.
Four Quarter has been pretty awesome experience for us. Just because, you know, having lost a restaurant in a fire and kind of the uncertainty of that, and opening a restaurant for the first time is a really difficult experience. So being able to do it a second time and have it being a success kind of from the beginning and people really being excited to see us open again and then kind of the national recognition that we've had through the restaurant, it's just really humbling and kind of, you know, we work really hard, and so seeing that pay off and, you know, showing off like the producers that we work with is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's really great. That is really great. Well, anybody who's in the Madison area, definitely check out Four Quarter. Check out the butcher shop. It's they're both really great places. So I was wondering, we've got a couple minutes left and I wanted to talk about your upcoming Kickstarter campaign, if that's okay. I know like Kickstarter is one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, don't want to talk about it until it's the moment, you know, because when you release it, then you have to get all the interest. But maybe we can drum up a little, like, you know, a little interest beforehand so people can be anticipating it. I feel like that's a very cool thing that you guys are doing.
Yeah, let me just break it down real quick. So when we started this process, we didn't know how to write a HACCP plan. And if you're in this industry, HACCP is kind of something that's really intimidating. And so we kind of worked from scratch and wrote up HACCPs and tried to figure it out for our salami company to kind of make sure that what we were doing was safe and stuff like that. Just the format itself is difficult. And then once you get into kind of justifying why certain things are safe, is really difficult as well. So what we want to do is take the HACCP that we have for salami and get it validated by a third-party testing organization. So what that means is, like, normally you can't just download a HACCP from a website. They're generally not out there, especially for salami, and use it for your process. But if we have it validated by a third party, then it has a scientific justification that shows that it's safe, and we're hoping to raise money with Kickstarter to pay for that, at which point we'll release that through a Creative Commons license for any small producer or any restaurant in the country to use.
That's so
cool.
And
I think that would be...
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And for our listeners, I believe HACCP is basically a safety plan for food businesses. I believe it stands for Hazard Analysis Critical Control Points.
Yep.
It's essentially a long form, super in-depth checklist of how you ensure that your business and your production is safe. And it's really, really challenging and takes a lot of time and
documentation.
And documentation. Super, super careful documentation. So to have this knowledge publicly available would be just a first amazing, super, super helpful resource.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason.
What we found was that other producers didn't want to share this information because they had spent $40,000.
They invest sure, so much yeah. money in it. Absolutely. And so they're like, nope, this is our proprietary thing. And go figure it out for yourself.
Exactly. So if we crowdsource it, you know, we don't have to make that money back on our intellectual property. That can just be an open process. And I'm really excited about it because if this would have been out there for us, we would have saved thousands and thousands of dollars. We would have saved so many hours. And I'm excited about other people not having to go through that process.
Karma is a boomerang, so you have a lot coming your way. Well, this is great. Well, actually, so we're out of time on the show, which is a bummer because I know we could talk for another hour, but hopefully in another couple months we can just do another revisit and have you back on the show again.
Yeah.
For sure. I love it. And it's so awesome to be on this network, and I'm having them, Wisconsin Cheese sponsoring it too is even more awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's we're really, really excited to be working with the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. And I feel like, you know, like you said, it's a cooperative. It's an example of that kind of infrastructure that exists in Wisconsin that just makes it a really great place to make food. So thank you again for being on the show. Oh, Underground Food Collective, do you want to give our listeners like a website where they can follow your activities?
Sure, just undergroundfoodcollective.org. And then you can find us on Facebook as well. Lots of good information there and kind of disseminated between the five different projects that we have going on.
All right, very good. Well, thanks again, Johnny. And we will be back next week with a fresh episode of Cutting the Curd.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.